Pod Clubhouse.
This is Caroline from Daily Review.
And this is Mike from Pop Culture Review. And this is Without a Paddle, the Schitt's Creek podcast. Today, we're discussing episode 6 of season 6, The Wingman. It was written by David West Reed, who wrote last week's episode, and directed by Donna Croce.
Man, you could really tell that last week's episode and this week's were written by the same person. It had so much more pep than the rest of the season.
Pep and heart, and it, like, the writing in these last two episodes, I feel like really, really captured what Schitt's Creek was and who these characters were.
I agree. Man, you know who I feel so bad for?
Who?
Bobbert.
Bob.
Poor Bob.
I've never...
What is up?
I like Bob. I always like Bob's shtick. I like how he kind of always jogs, you know, slapping his hands together. Like, he's got, like, a real, like, idiosyncratic, like, way. You see him coming, you're like, even without, like, if he was just in shadow, you would think, that's Bob. I know Bob is coming.
Hey, do you know what? He actually did that in his audition.
He
came in like that. He did that jog move as part of his audition. Yeah.
That probably alone got him the role, because that's Bob. That's exactly who that guy is. I think every town has one, at least one. You totally understand who this guy is. But yeah, I really feel bad for him. This was a Bob-centric episode in a lot of ways, and really got the old heartstrings pulling for him.
You know, I didn't really think that much about Gwen over the entire seasons. I think every time that, even though he's mentioned her quite a bit, I never really thought too hard about her. And then after this episode, I went back and watched a couple different ones kind of popping through the seasons. And you know what? She has been really edgy with Bob the entire time. So back to the episode when David is just going to put in his application for the general store, Gwen is like, if you don't get the Christmas store in here, you need to not come home. Every single episode, if you listen to these little side little Gwen parts, she is like so threatening and so ready to like take him out. It's insane. The only one that she's in there that where they actually interact a lot and she's not quite so harsh is the poker episode when they're actually playing poker. And then she's like just sort of, you know, a normal interaction with him. But all the rest, when he keeps talking to her on the phone or if he mentions her, she is like hovering ready to bite his neck. I didn't ever really pick up on that all these seasons.
That's interesting. I didn't really think about it either. I will admit I didn't really ponder about Gwen, but you're probably right. And I think that's interesting that this is where now it's wound up towards the end of the show's run.
Yeah, they like really set this up this entire time that she was like ready to lash out at him. Craziness. So this came out of the blue for me, though, despite all the forewarning that this was coming. I did not see Bob hanging out at the motel in tears as where we were going with Johnny's storyline this week. Did you?
No. This seemed like a real left turn from the recent motel. I mean, it's been motel, motel, motel with him and Roland every episode so far this season. So now in episode 6, we got this like real like respite from that. And we get back to the Bob and Gwen storyline, which was laid in, you know, a couple episodes ago. But it seems like this has continued to fall apart in the background and Bob is not handling it well.
I guess they had to figure out a storyline that could bring back the people who would have been like town council and all those things. So it's like, you know, Roland and Ronnie and Bob, they all were with Moira on town council. So we got to see them play together quite a bit. But right. This actually allowed them to go and do something interactive with each other that seems completely just out of left field, but it gives them something to do because Moira has been so busy with the movie making, really, that hasn't given us a reason to go over to town council.
Town hall has been empty, like, other than the premiere last week.
Isn't that weird?
No, I think it's one of those things. I think the idea is that the show, I mean, these things are going on in the background. I think the beauty of Schitt's Creek is the day in the life. Every episode is just kind of a day in the life. But, you know, we don't see the cafe in this episode, but I have no doubt of who is sitting in there eating and hanging out all day. And Twyla, you know, making smoothies for behind the counter all day. Like, I really think that's all just kind of going on. That's my feeling about Schitt's Creek. It's like one of those things that really continues to live and breathe, even when we don't get to see it.
Do you think that most men have the attitude of Bob where he's like, once again, Gwen has another male cousin visiting? Do you think most men are that obtuse about what's going on in their household?
He knew because he says, thank God she has so many male cousins to visit. And then they look at each other. Everyone else looks at each other. But then you hear him go, oh, 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 oh. Like, he knows.
He does know.
He does know.
I thought he legitimately didn't know.
No.
I felt like he was like,
oh. But I don't think he would have cried that way without it. Or unless maybe it just hit him there when he said it out loud. Maybe that's what it was.
Or maybe everybody's faces.
Yeah.
The country has like, so many Bob.
Male cousins. Yeah. Who the thought Gwen was getting it so hard?
Do you remember what Gwen looks like?
She's laying pipe. God damn it.
She is like a grandma looking lady. She's not like the Jane Fonda 80.
She's not Jocelyn. I'll tell you that.
I know, but Gwen is supposed to be older, right? I'm going to compare an older woman to her.
Yes.
But like, you know, Grace
and
Frankie.
She's not Helen Mirren type.
No. Mm. Like, they're always like out there doing stuff. But then it's like, I don't know. She didn't seem that way. Although, hey, you know what? I give mad props because I feel like as I've gotten older, there's been this thing where I didn't realize what people of different ages were doing when I didn't get to that age. It's like, I feel like you get like a little blazer and like a card when you come to a different age range. So like, I didn't know what people in their 40s were doing. I had no idea. I'd never thought about it. And now that I'm here, I'm like, everybody's doing the same things. And
they're
it's crazy.
They're all just fucking. They're all fucking. That's
well,
what they're doing.
Yeah, they are. And
apparently,
I'm like, this
that
is
never stops. You
crazy.
Just keep fucking.
Well, okay, but I never thought about that. So then I'm wondering if when I get to my 50s or 60s or 70s, every time it's going to be like opening the new club door and being like, what the? You guys are in here doing what? Like, I didn't know when you turn 80, everyone does the drugs. Like, I didn't know. That's so funny. I feel surprised at every age.
Well, if anyone out there is if anyone out there listening is older, tell us, like, are you still, you know, hanging out with your male cousins on the regular?
Well, like, I want to know, like, okay, because don't
know,
you feel like
I
it happened?
Know what to expect, you know?
Well, didn't you feel like it happened? Like I feel like there's things that happen when you became a parent that like no one told you about, or things that happen when you got married that no one told you about. But once you get there and you're in the club, everyone around you is like, yeah, everyone knows that in the club. Duh. And it's like, I didn't know until I got here. Now everyone's just so informed and I'm such an idiot. This is exactly what I feel like is going on with this kind of stuff. Like, everyone's having sex in their 40s. I'm such a lost monkey. I had no idea.
Well, yes, not everyone is. Sad not trombone.
Well, looking for sex? How about that? Looking
there you
for
go. Hey-o.
Interested in it? How about that? There you go.
You know, today's my birthday. So, speaking of like the journey through the 40s, this was particularly thinking about like getting older and like what people are doing in like their age range. I think every birthday is like you always stop and think a little bit and be like, am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing at this age?
How is Cuatro y Dos treating you on your Feliz Cumpleaños aquí?
It's been excellent. I got to watch Schitt's Creek. What's better than that? You know, I got the
very true. Did you do something to celebrate?
I did not have a whiskey, if that's what you're asking. not yet anyway.
Well, you
high
wouldn't
five.
Have you would not have slow tromboned had you had a whiskey.
That's true. I would have been fast tromboning for sure.
Oh, you would have been like burr, 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 burr. Totally 76 trombones.
76. At 42, I need a nap before I get up to 76.
Oh my God. See, but you don't know. When you get to 76, it's going to be a complete shock. Everyone's going to be like, don't you know in your 70s, this is what goes down now? It's all about a blowjob. Like, I don't know what it's going to be about.
They just replace all of the good parts at 76.
Everything's medicated and propped up with metal rods. I don't know. I shouldn't even say that because that's probably not what's happening at all. That's what is perceived by us younger people. We're going to get there and they're going to hand out like, you know, Lays and, you know, whatever, hookahs. And we're going to be like, this is what you all do? I had no idea.
The question is what kind of lube, if any, is Gwen using? I think that's really the question we need
definitely.
To be answered.
What is that one brand? Astroglide.
Bats in the attic?
Bats in the attic. What? Astroglide is what I think she's using. She's crazy, that Gwen. I think that isn't Astroglide like backdoor lube? That's my guess.
I thought you could use it either, but yes.
It's like backdoor WD-40.
Because the squeaky wheel is the one who gets the oil.
Oh my God, I just read this thing on Twitter. This is terrible. This person goes,
yes, I promise if you're listening, we'll get to Schitt's Creek in a second.
This is about Gwen is a sexy character.
Let's work through all of this.
Listen to me. Gwen is a sexy character. We've got to talk about this. This is important.
We didn't even get to the sex storyline yet in the episode. There actually was a whole sex storyline.
That's true. Should I have waited for that whole
conversation? No. I mean, you've opened up the Astroglide.
I really want to talk about. I want to talk about Gwen. I want to talk about
slide it in
her business. No, okay. So you guys, this is a little X-rated, but you know, just we're grown-ups. Mike finally turned 42 today, so we can talk about the real stuff. We can let him in the club, okay? So I've read this thing where someone says, if I have to spit start the situation, then I don't want any of that. And then the girl's like, if you have to spit start the situation, I didn't want any of that. And I was like, spit start? What? And then it was a picture of like water droplets and a cactus. Emojis.
I feel bad for her. I don't know. I take it as like a source of pride. I guess if it goes the wrong way, I would take it as a personal failure if I fail to create a well-lubed situation in my partner's personal business.
Cactus. What I'm going to say
I want to be the oasis in that desert. You know?
Well, okay, here's the deal on that front, though. Because we're all in our 40s now, so you can be a part of this. I mean, obviously, guys and gals out there, like, bodies work different at different ages. And so maybe she's super into it, but her body just was like out to lunch that day. She had too much
coffee. Maybe she had to ride up. Caffeine,
we don't say that kind of words, but maybe she had a salty pretzel. I don't know.
Oh, she had mall pretzels. David had mall pretzels today.
That's exactly. Oh my God. When I saw him eating that mall pretzel, I was like, mall pretzel sighting. That was awesome. All right. Well, let's get into this so that we can start diving in further, right? So we're going to go try to get Bob's beak wet.
Got to dip his oil stick. Yep, for sure. What did you think of them putting a Bob in Johnny's suit? It was a little bit snug. And it was kind of like, you know, when David got dressed up in Patrick's clothes earlier in the season. I thought it was a funny well to go back to for the sight gag of it.
He looked to me like that ventriloquist dummy that wears the...
Charlie McCarthy?
I was thinking he was a gray suit. Doesn't Charlie wear a black suit? But it's a navy blue suit that he's wearing, that Bob's wearing. But I was thinking that the ventriloquist dummy in my head had on a gray suit. Anyway, that's what he looked like to me. He looked like a ventriloquist dummy. Like his feet and his like ankles and his... hands were like sticking out way further than the suit in a very comical, goofy looking way. I didn't know really quite why they felt like they had to do that, unless Bob only wears that mechanic shirt, which maybe he only does.
I think it's probably been a while. I can't think back to his brother's funeral what he wore.
Oh, I'm sure he was wearing a suit. That's true. Oh, but you know what? I bet he can't go back to the house.
True. They had to probably make do what they had at the motel.
Yes, that's what the deal was. Yes, that makes sense. Well, and Bob is so long and lanky. He's so funny. Did you think it was funny that they included Ronnie as like their wingman as well? Like, I kind of thought it was going to be Roland, Johnny, and Bob, but like, was she a value add in the wingman department?
She absolutely was. I'm really enjoying Ronnie this season. Ronnie and Roland together are like really kind of on fire as like this grouchy old men Muppets in the wing, you know, like commentary on Johnny, on all things Johnny and like what's going on in the town. I really like their dynamic of just kind of both sniping and making each other laugh. So yeah, no, I was totally about Ronnie being around.
It seemed like everything that could go wrong was going wrong in this bar. When Bob's like sitting there talking up. The
Wobbly Elm? I thought that's a great name for a bar.
The Wobbly Elm, is that what it was called?
That was what it was called.
Yeah. That's hilarious. When Bob, though, is like looking like he's chatting up a lady and things were like going well. Did you expect it to be their marriage counselor?
No, I didn't know what it was going to be. So it made me just feel sad. It was just more sad trombones for Bob. It was like, oh, he lost his marriage. What kind of fucking marriage counselor makes that kind of decision also to like split and go with the wife
and like breaks up with you in the bar, like when it's like right. Oh my God, like not even like in a session, just be like, yeah, too bad, like by the way, you're clearly on a rebound bar visit here, but also I'm gonna break up with you as well, like good Lord.
But you know, Bob handled it like a champ. Yeah, Bob is great because he just handles He doesn't handle it well, but he comes off like he just rolls with the punches so well that he hugs her and then he kind of, you know, comes back over to the group and then just very kind of hangdog expressionly, you know, says, oh, no, that was my marriage counselor. She broke up with me.
Too much. So then the crew has this idea about, you know, making Bobby like the comic that everyone wants to come and hang out with. And so they all like fake laugh. Have you ever done something like that in a bar where like your pals try to like create a little buzz for you like that?
Not like that. That seems like an ill-fated attempt. But I've been in situations where we have maybe tried to highlight a member of a gang to try and get someone's attention in a bar.
What's good way to do that? Share with our listeners. What's a good way to do it? That fake laugh thing, that's a real thing.
No, I'm sure. But I think the way it played out is definitely a possible scenario and maybe predictable scenario that when you're pointing and staring and laughing, it may not get you the results that you want. I think if your person is shy but has some kind of skill, maybe you highlight that, you know, you
like put juggling it on
some kind of, or you know, like something, some bar, something bar related. If like they can
break dancing,
yeah, no, not break dancing, but maybe if they can dance, maybe if they
like
can
pull
dance.
Out a cardboard thing so that they can spin smoothly.
I always have that. I'm always ready to break down.
I know,
and do a little, little bebopping. But I'm more of a pop and locker, if truth be told. But I don't know. I don't. But like playing quarters, I don't know. I don't know what a good example would be. If they're good at pool, like that's always a good way too, especially if you're in a bar with a pool table and hopefully if they know how to play pool, you can like really let them shine. Even if you're good, maybe take a dive, you know, really, really play up how good they are or, you know, maybe inflate their skills.
That totally makes sense.
You want to show your belly a little bit and make them the dominant one. So they have like a inflated sense of themselves that will be attractive to a mate.
Nice. That seems good. Women do stuff like that, but I it's a much more like a, have you met my friend? Whatever. I definitely do that move all the time.
Well, I was going to ask you, because you strike me as someone who probably is, have you ever served in the wingman role?
Oh, yeah. Constantly. I'm constantly in the wingman position. And I'm all about it. Like because I'm not scared to go up to somebody and just start chatting them up. So I'm happy to like walk right over and start laughing and chatting and then be like, oh, you know what? Do you know who, like, find their in or whatever. They say something like, oh, do you know who's, like, down to clown? My friend over here.
Now, have you ever had the experience? You're an attractive woman, as it turns out, for listeners who haven't seen you. Have you ever had the experience where you go over in the wingman role, but it backfires and the person who you're supposed to be setting your friend up with has shown interest just in you?
Super awkwardly, yes, that has happened, and it is very awkward. Yes, that it happened recently again, and the whole time I was like, no, but for real, it's her birthday. Be interested in her, and they were very like, no.
Yeah,
I would imagine, awkward.
Yeah, I would think that if you have any kind of group of women, I mean, I think women generally look better to men in bars anyway.
Oh, what does that mean? Like they had their beer goggles on?
Yeah, I think a little bit, but I think just the idea, like, you know, women clean up better than men generally. So A group of women gone out on the prowl, even if it's only maybe one of them for the prowl and the rest are just in the wingman role or whatever, you're going to look better probably than the most of the guys. And so guys are going to, I would say it's a giant pitfall that has to be avoided for women playing in that wingman role. Like it works in Ronnie's case. I think it actually works in Ronnie's case because she's also picking up women. So
very true. Yes, that's true.
But if that had been a role switch, though, I think what's happened to you with your friends is a very possible thing that probably happens more frequently than maybe you think.
I completely agree with you. That is
because that's the person who has had the courage. You know, like that's. All things being equal, you probably are going to be more attracted to the person who had the balls to come up to you in the bar than the one who's hiding back at the table, you know?
Ah, see? Intrigue. Okay, that's interesting. I don't know if that always works for men, but I would, but maybe I will agree with you for women. That's a little bit trickier.
Yeah. If a woman came up to me and was like, hey, and chatted me up and was smiling and was laughing and then was like, hey, you know, look at my friend over there. My impulse would probably most likely be like, well, what if I just look at you? You know, like you're
see,
the one
and
here.
Then that would be your game. That would be how you're going
to
play it.
You're the one talking to me. You're the one making me laugh. You're the one over here. So why don't we just keep talking about
my experience, though, if you have a good looking friend and you're a good friend who's like making someone laugh, they're going to still go with the good looking friend. So I would say that if you just have to line up your people correctly, does that make sense?
Yeah, I think your theory depends on the attractiveness level not being comparable, though. If you're both attractive, but you're the one there in person making the person laugh, well, then you're
already
up.
A leg up.
Well, then you're two up on the
literally
the
a leg up.
Well, that's if you have your leg up while you're talking, you're probably also putting out another kind of vibe altogether.
That would be a scene, which is
a tactic. You know.
Well, Sure. I was going to ask our listeners if you have a tactic in a bar for either being a wingman or any other kind of trick. Like, how do you just, if you are just feeling brave yourself and you want to go hit on somebody, do you have any great lines? Do you have any little tricks? Do you put your leg up? Is that like a trick that you do? I'm definitely a touchy person, so I definitely will like touch your arm or touch your back or something like that. That old Moira trick of like running your hand down their back, like, yeah, that works. That's successful.
I think that brings us to the next part of the episode, and it's a great way into there about what are your best pickup lines you've ever heard or have ever used yourself. Something along the lines of that sweater really brings out your lips. what did that do for you? Did that work on you?
Yeah, I think that was an excellent come on line and would absolutely work on me. And the way that Patrick was like, well, I loved his response. That was so cute and genuine. And yeah, it would work. And I want to use that line. I think that is hot business.
With Jake being back this week, they ramped up his sexual ooziness to like 1,000.
You did feel that way?
I did feel that way. He was always obviously about the sex with him and Stevie and David when we saw him, you know, earlier
calling her
on.
Pony. Do you remember that?
Ooh. Yeah, yep, yeah, yep. Yeah. But I feel like literally every single thing he said, this was like a very Joey Tribbiani like turn this week with Jake. I mean, what the first three lines are, I get a lot of orders. I meet a lot of people. Whiskey or whatever. Like literally everything he said was basically like subtext like, let's fuck. Like that was literally let's fuck.
See, I think he's been like that the whole time.
Already today.
Maybe
I
didn't
maybe it's
see him
we
that
haven't
way.
Seen him in a while.
Yeah, I think he was always like that because I the amount of experience I feel like you would have to have done what he did in the past, which was like, you know, just saying like, I slept with you and you slept with him and I slept with him. So let's all just be together. Like that whole part. Oh, I feel like you have to have some real like just smoothness to be able to do that in the middle of Twyla's Cafe.
What did you think of David, the way he was really seemed to be enjoying watching Patrick get this attention and watch Patrick flush over it?
It was a good mix of him being, how do I want to say, like tickled about the whole thing, watching his partner be so flustered and sort of just like taken aback by the whole thing. But then also, I think at some point there was a smooth, subtle layer of, okay, that's enough. Like you can be flattered and you can be into this on some level. But, and I'll tell you specifically when Patrick takes his coat off and he's wearing the really short sleeves to like show off his arms. I felt like Patrick was
one
like,
and a half size too small shirt.
I felt like there was a mix of still he was kind of laughing, but I think that there was that subtle layer of like, all right, you're like reciprocating now. Like it's one thing for Jake to hit on you, but like you're wearing like a I want you to notice my body shirt. Like, okay.
Well, but David also moisturized his body in a leather scented moisturizer.
I know.
So. The two of them were both down the clown.
They were. So do you think that had they walked in and had it been an empty apartment with just Jake, do you think we were going to all have whiskey? And
oh, they were going to have the whiskey probably a couple shots that night, I would imagine.
Wow.
For sure.
Wow.
Yeah.
So were you shocked to find out that this was like a whole thing?
Yeah, I think I was. I think I was just because I didn't think that's where it was going to go. I thought they were going to have them, the three of them, and then really have to like figure out if not they were gonna if they were gonna do this or not as like a an engaged couple.
Right.
So that's where I thought it was gonna go. But then when I saw all the people, I was like, oh, so it's gonna be like an orgy thing. Like that's where it's gonna go, and they're gonna have to have that kind of discussion. It's gonna be more humorous. Like they're still gonna have to have the discussion, but it's gonna be more in like a humorous orgy sense.
See,
you know, like getting a massage. The massage train going.
See, okay, so this is another situation where I feel like I just don't have my membership card in Blazer. And if I did, I would find out that like 80% of the people I know participate in these things. Like I just don't know. I haven't gone to a whiskey party yet. And so in that case, I'm like, oh, like this is such a shock. And then in reality, people are like, yeah, no, sister, you just don't know how many people are actually doing a massage train. Do you feel like it's like more common than we think?
I think in this, today's day and age, I think there are a lot of people having a whiskey.
Oh,
I do.
I think it's so funny that we talked about threesomes in our last episode and then we come upon this episode totally unknowing you guys. We did not know this was going to happen.
We had not yet seen this episode when we had the threesome conversation, nor did we have we seen the episode when you very correctly brought up the difference between of an experience level between David and Patrick, which I think was really on display here tonight. David seemed much more comfortable with the entire situation than Patrick, who really seemed like he got dressed up and seemed like he was like a kid ready for the first day of school.
Yes.
Like he was excited and he was nervous and he was flushed and he was wearing, you know, his abs and his, you know, his pecs and his arms were all bulging and he was all like nervous.
All a Twitter.
David was just there. Yeah, he was all a Twitter. And David was just kind of there like, my boy, you know, we're about to go do some weird shit and you don't even know.
I so like it though that still, however, he did moisturize from head to toe, like he said. So I appreciate that he like prepared, but he prepared in a lot more subtle way.
He was prepared for the night to go based on his experience. I think Patrick was prepared for the night to go and had dressed based on it, what he thought in his head it would be like. And I think David was coming from a place of experience. Like, I've had whiskey before. you know, I could do it. I got to tell you, what did you think of, because I very much agree with his sentiment. What did you think of David's idea that if they were to have a whiskey together,
mm-hmm.
which by the way, if I think everyone gets it, but we're talking about having a threesome, mm-hmm. that someone like Jake is the right person to have it with because he literally cares about nothing and no one.
We would have to say, so the alternative is to have somebody who's going to get deeply emotionally invested. Yeah, for sure. Unless you're planning on living a lifestyle. Yeah.
Sure.
Unless you're going for that, unless that's the goal is to pick up somebody full time as like another person, then I think, yeah, you got to find somebody who is truly okay to be there just for the pleasure of it all and the fun and the interaction and the whatever, but can put their heart safely away in their purse or their wallet or whatever and not in any way need to bring that to the table, because I cannot see that going well for anybody.
My instinct on it is that if you are in a relationship and you are exploring the threesome as a couple, that the person you choose to be with has to be someone disengaged, because you really want to use them more as just kind of like a human like sex toy for your couple's pleasure.
God, you shouldn't say the word using, but yeah.
But that,
participating
not
with them on that level, right?
Yes, as someone to bring pleasure to is not for someone that it's for you and your partner to experience pleasure without having to worry about either of you thinking about that other person the next day.
Yes, for sure. Or, I mean, and hey, I bet it's, you know, I don't know how common this is. I don't know if it's always like a couple and a third, but I would say that it would probably be even more successful if you had three people who truly were just attracted to each other and like no one had to go home and have to deal with that the next day with like a conversation and be like, are you thinking about blah, blah, blah? Because like that is going to be on their brains. Their whiskey night is going to be on their brains at some point. I think probably.
So you think like three strangers who are just attracted to each other?
Stranger might be like wow, or like that
just
would be
not in a relationship, not in a,
yes, you, not in
so
any
thinking,
kind of relationship.
The optimal,
right?
I think the optimal threesome is three people who know each other to some extent, but are not otherwise emotionally entangled with each other.
I think somehow the emotionally entangled part, yeah, the more you could probably extract the emotional entanglement,
sure.
I would think the threesome would probably be really good. But I'm also still of the mind that like the best sex is definitely sex with somebody that you have some sort of emotional connection with. Like you'd really have to just like come in at it hard, quick. Like everyone would have to gel real quick to where you you do have some level of like, I don't want to like, you know, hurt you or anything. And I'm not scared of you. But also, I don't need to think about you another day after this. That's a right. walking a fine line. Having a whiskey seems very complicated.
Yes. Yes. Whenever your brain gets involved, whiskey can be very difficult.
Yeah, I would think
whiskey,
so.
Whiskey and really any kind of wine can be very difficult once your brain gets involved. This was a great example of Schitt's Creek excelling at really understated line deliveries that are funny when Patrick is defending Jake right after he leaves, after dropping off the coffee table, and he tells David he's a one-man operation. Did you catch what David's response was?
No.
He goes, Patrick says, you know, get the guy a break. You know, he's a one-man operation. And David, without missing a beat, says, not in my experience. I thought that was very funny.
I thought there was another funny part. When they showed up and like, not only is this like a huge orgy, but Stevie's there to participate.
Were you surprised that Stevie was there?
A little bit. That was gonna be my question. Except for not. I wasn't that surprised only because a previous episode when she was going out and David's like, oh, the lady is going to get laid. That whole thing. Like, no, she again, like, welcome to the club. We're all adults. People go out and just have sex with other people. Like, turns out. And so I feel like that was right on. And I'm glad actually that she was there, like, good on her, and makes sense with Jake and her past that Pony would be there, right? Why wouldn't she be? But when she was like, can I just have this? And David goes, no, just super casual. Can I have one thing for myself? No.
Well, I liked it when she said, I've got about a half a drink left here. So after I'm done, I'll meet you guys. And like, her drink is clearly empty. Like, she's literally at the bottom of her glass.
That's so funny.
It was really
David's
funny.
Like, no, you won't. She's like, no, I won't.
No, I won't. But and her glass, like, she's holding it next to her face. So it's clearly in frame.
That's really
and it's
funny.
Empty. It's like just the littlest dribble left. She's like, I've got about a half a drink here. So after I finish it, I'm going to, you know, I'll probably leave.
That's really funny. I love it. Yeah, and good for Stevie. I'm all for it.
Girlfriend's going to get. Yeah, she's going to go get.
Why wouldn't you want to be in the massage train? I think that good on her. And this town seems like, you know, this is like cheap thrill central. Everyone should go ahead. Go for it.
Schitt's Creek is a horny town. It is a town that is well lubed. And it is a town that is not like afraid to get down.
See, the thing is I think what we're finding out as we grow here, as we become grown on your big old birthday, is that every town's a horny town. Everyone's having sex everywhere, Mike. That's the freaking news. And I was like,
That's what I'm doing wrong. Aha! I have figured it out on my 42nd birthday.
You need to move to a small town, get in on the massage train.
Apparently, I just need to go outside. So
you need to go find some 40-somethings and just sniff around for 10 seconds.
I will definitely be at the bar after we're done with this.
There you go.
Gotta go figure something out.
Definitely. Yeah. You know who's trying to figure stuff out in this episode?
Who?
Ted and Alexis.
Ted and Alexis are having a bit of a time.
A little bit of a rough patch here.
This is the heart that I was talking about at the beginning of the episode. This was not, and some of it was funny, but it was really good emotional heartstring pulling stuff.
And they had those like those little tiny moments of hanging up on each other before the other one says, I love you. They did that multiple times and it happened to both of them on either side. Ooh, that is a sure sign of trouble. Like if you don't.
The love you disconnect. Yep.
The hanging up before the other person says it. Oh, that is trouble town.
You know, she does it to him first. She says, I love you. And then he's in the middle of saying he's gotten like half of it out as she's disconnecting, but she's already moved on to talk to her mom. He doesn't even let her start it before he disconnects at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
And she really sits there and stares at the computer before closing the laptop.
Yeah.
That hits her really, really hard because she didn't even get to start to say, I love you back. And he had disconnected, you know, like he really loved you and rang. But otherwise, I didn't really get the sense from him like they were in trouble from his point of view, as much as he was acknowledging that at this point, like he's just this trip is just too time consuming for him. And he acknowledges that she's going to be miserable here. It was a pretty woke realization from him. As far as relationships goes, that her going there wasn't going to make anything better and probably would make things worse.
I agree with you very, very much. I think that even the things that he said he was trying to do, he was obviously thinking about her the whole time he was there in terms of like trying to put on screens or trying to be like aware, like, how can I make this more comfortable for her? And
order a juicer.
Yeah. And he was just recognizing like, you know what? This isn't going to work. Like she isn't going to be happy here. I thought that that was just like a very mature realization. It didn't feel like it was a, I don't want to be in this relationship. It just felt like, you know, this is just something that I don't think you would enjoy and I don't think you should come here, which we kind of said the whole time. Remember earlier in this podcast, we said, do you think she's ever going to really go and be with Ted? Is that ever going to actually happen? And, no, I'm saying a big fat no.
No. I mean, I think at the time we predicted, all I think it was the first episode, I think we predicted that she probably, something would keep coming up that would keep her from going. Time for Ted to cut his trip short at some point and come home.
That was going to be my question to you then. Let me ask you that. If Alexis keeps getting denied and actually heading over there, is Ted going to continuously have trips that are going to keep him away?
I don't know. I mean, the brain in my head that's like an amateur screenwriter for TV, for lesser TV shows than Schitt's Creek, says that Ted cuts his trip short and comes home to be with her. But I feel like that's kind of unfair for Ted, though, too, that, you know, he's got this opportunity. They are committed to each other. I do believe they are in love with each other. They should be able to last until his mission is over and he returns home on his own time. That's what I would like to see. I hope the show has the faith to do that.
Okay, but now they've added this extra layer of problem here, or whatever, complication. Alexis is getting opportunities coming her way because of how well she handled the publicity stunt, I put in air quotes, that went on with Moira at the premiere. Adding this layer, first of all, did you think that that was clever that they spun that and said, oh no, those crows were totally trained to do that?
Really clever. Really clever, because ever since we watched last week's episode, I was thinking to myself, I had read the episode like blurb for this, where it says, you know, Moira and Alexis deal with the fallout from the video that went viral. And that was all I knew until I sat down to watch this episode. So I had been thinking how they were going to spin it, what that was going to do, if that was going to send Moira into some kind of another trip in the closet, what was going to happen. It was really unexpected. I really was unexpected how they handled it. And I really liked it because, again, I love getting to see Alexis get this kind of recognition and job well done, you know, pat on the back that she deserves. Because this is where she shines, doing these kinds of things.
And she has worked so hard to get here. Like, you know, between the having to go back and get her diploma and then going to college and now opening her own business.
She's a boss, she's man. Done, she's a total boss.
She's done great. It was very clever to have a lot of that be revealed through the little morning show. I thought that that was cute. And it was a very funny, like, cold open to have these two characters who we didn't know. Like, at first I was like, is the show on? Is this the show? Like, who is Barb and Lizzie? Like, what is this? Yeah. I didn't even recognize.
Morning Live with Barb and Lizzie.
Even recognize that I was actually watching it.
Did you ever did you watch Watchmen at all when it was on HBO
a couple
of months ago? Moira's outfit she wore it the whole episode was like Rorschach's mask.
Oh God,
but turned into an entire outfit. It was distracting to me the entire time. I mean, she's really turned hard into the black and white for the crows movie.
Yes.
Like, that's really, really become hard, her color palette, like the splotchy black and white. But all I could think of was Rorschach's mask from from Watchmen.
That's really funny. Yes. Yeah. She always, her wardrobe is always amazing though, but I agree that it seems like a little bit a notch up in these last in this last couple of episodes. This whole idea that Alexis is being wooed now, not Moira, Alexis. Did you expect for this to be a giant problem for Moira?
I really did. When she walks in and Moira's just kind of sitting there and she's not being jubilant. So right away, my like spidey sense was tingling that something was up, but I couldn't figure out what. And then until she reveals that all of the flowers and cards and gifts were all for Alexis, Moira is clearly going to lose her shit about Alexis. Alexis, you're stealing my thunder, you know, like one of those kinds of things. But she didn't. Well, she did a little bit when she talks about Joyce DeWitt sending her little small flute of flowers on the side of the
Joyce
bed, which I thought
DeWitt.
Was really
do you remember? Joyce do you DeWitt, remember that?
When was the last time Joyce DeWitt was mentioned on TV?
Hold on, though. Really in Schitt's Creek. Do you remember? It was the episode when Johnny and Moira were asked to watch Baby Roland. And Moira was like, I got to head out because my TV movie of the week with Joyce DeWitt is replaying and I'm going to go watch it with Ronnie and all them. Yeah. So that's why, because they were like co-stars. And she mentions Joyce DeWitt like several times. She's like, she always did do such a good job. Like, whatever. I was like, oh my God, that was awesome that they like brought Joyce DeWitt back, that she got some small little flowers from her. That little moment, Alexis gives up the maid of honor to Stevie. It felt very like that. Like, like that felt very karma-y to me, that Alexis did that for Stevie, and now Moira, instead of where she could have just pounded on her and just like taken over, she stepped back and allowed Alexis to have her moment. And you and I have talked a lot about how all the characters have had a lot of growth, but Moira has really stayed Moira. This was a growth moment for her.
It's true. The only real moment of growth I ever attribute to Moira was in the Cabaret episode. She had been kind of a mentor, I felt, for Stevie the entire time. But when Stevie shows up after Moira's already kind of starting to get dressed at the costume because she's going to go on, Moira very much gives her the credit that she's due, gives Stevie the credit that she's due, and doesn't try and hog it from her then. This moment reminded me very much of that. That Moira is able to take a step back from herself and allow someone else to shine in something that she's related, you know, involved in.
So now we have this big trouble. Alexis is being wooed away, could go do something really amazing. And Moira actually assists in this. Because
it's just a list, I think. The way Moira presents it. Yeah, what did you think of her momming skills? As a mom yourself, who has to give advice time to time to her children.
Time to time. Hourly, Michael. Jesus.
Well, she acknowledges Alexa's issue with Ted.
With Theodore.
Versus this burgeoning career with Theodore. Mm-hmm. How did you think she handled it? How would you rate her advice on like a scale of 1 to 10?
I actually think she handled it really well, because this was one of those times when it's important not to make the decision for your kiddo, but to help them see how you go through a decision-making process, walk them through that. And so, I kind of set it up on my notes as like a pro-con, but then it was like, no, it's not really pro-con. It's really just like a fork in the road, like choice A, choice B. Which I know in reality, could she be with Ted and have a relationship with him? Maybe. Maybe he could fold back into how everything's going. But if she really heads off to a big city, New York, LA, whatever, and wants to proceed in her career in like a really big way, she could be incredibly successful. And Moira's right on that. That's not going to happen in Schitt's Creek. Ted, I mean, he is a vet. You could be a vet in any town. So I feel like he could very well, you know, want to go with her or continue his travels and still have some sort of long distance thing with her, coming back to like a home base with her. I thought that she did a good job of not just saying, oh, I think you should definitely go career or you should definitely be with Ted, but just walk her through like, how are you going to actually kind of compare these two choices and what should you do?
Well, it's interesting because of who Moira is and with her own career, and that she's faced this with Johnny, and you know, whether or not she's ever put a lot of thought into it. I'm sure at some point in her earlier life she did. When she makes the pro list, that's really just the pro list, not con list. And then Alexis prompts her and says, well, and versus Ted on the other side. And Moira doesn't, you're right, she doesn't scoff at that. She just wasn't thinking about it. For Moira, it was just about the career side of it. Like the Theodore side of it didn't really register for her. But once Alexis says it, she almost internalizes it and says, oh, yeah, you do have to decide that. But I like that Moira just asks her first at the outset. She says, well, what do you want? That's a question that we don't ask our kids a lot. We don't ask other people. When people ask our advice, I think a lot of times we forget to ask them that central point of what do you want, which is a very important, I think, question that maybe we don't think about enough. We think about all the things around it without ever actually asking that central question of what will make you happy? What do you want?
Well, and I think a lot of people get stuck in the, well, what are all the things that have to fall into place in order to land where I want to be? And they focus on those things like, well, you know, I don't have enough money to do that. Or in their case, you know, we're long distance. And so how could we possibly be together if Ted's, you know, traveling on an island and I'm somewhere else and all these kinds of things? Like, you can focus on those, or you can say, well, ultimately, I want to be in a loving, caring relationship. So if it's Ted that I want to be with, then I want to make that choice. And then I want to make things work moving forward towards that. And same with her career. I don't think she doesn't have to have a career to be with Ted. No. And I don't think Ted has to give up anything necessarily to be with her. But they would just have to recognize that it's going to mean, if she says, I want my husband to be home 7 nights a week, then Ted's not her guy. You know, if he wants to pursue this research type of background.
Right, but even if she, but on the same token, though, even if he comes back and just, you know, reopens the vet's office in Schitt's Creek, she can base her operations out of Schitt's Creek.
Can she, though?
Could she
meet clients? But, could she really, like, be a part of the scene?
Well, no, but my point was she could, but she will be flying around the country constantly and the world constantly.
Right.
Because even if you're based in LA, you know, PR people in LA still fly everywhere constantly. PR people like that they're on planes as much as they're anywhere else. If this is what she's going to pursue, she's going to be traveling a lot.
Regardless.
No matter where she bases out of.
You know? And so unless her goal would be to have her family or husband or whatever travel with the whole time, then this was always going to be on the table of like at some point, no matter where your home base is, whether Ted has his business in New York and they manage to stay together, you know, basing out of someplace or based out of Schitt's Creek and they're both just traveling in two different directions. This is going to be a complicated but very grown up relationship. Like both of their careers are finally taking off. He was a small town vet. You know, and he got picked up to go on this research and they actually discovered things. I think that his career is really on the rise as well. This is probably a very common problem for people in their 30s of like what happens when you finally become successful in a way that your paths diverge. What do you do?
How do you make long distance relationships work? You know, I believe they can work. I think they are some of the trickiest, most difficult relationships to make work. And I think it really requires a lot of effort on both sides. Curious if any of our listeners out there have ever gone through the long distance relationship thing and what kind of pitfalls they've experienced and what they've done to, if you were giving advice, if you were playing marriage counselor, or couple counselor to Alexis and Ted, what kind of advice would you give them to continue to make this long distance relationship work?
That's a super good question. And they've done a good job of showing different little parts like, you know, the video sexting and the having him, you know, set up the cafe.
They got aborted again. They got sexting aborted again because of the fire ants. These two can't even get it on via Skype, you know?
Oh, gosh. But yeah, I thought the most clever was really bringing the laptop and setting it up at the cafe and having it like closed and just allowing her to have like, you know, a dinner conversation with him because those are the little things that you do miss every day if you are in a long distance situation where awesome that you get to see each other when you do. But the everyday conversations, the just little things that you just sit and chit chat with, you know, about at dinner. Definitely that's something that is a missed part that I thought Ted and Alexis were really trying to work around that.
I agree with you. Even today, they had the great little conversation about Myrtle and laying her eggs. And Alexis makes the funny comment about fresh omelets. And then, you know, and then Ted answers her, you know, it's like, you know, if we ate her eggs, it would destroy, you know, an ecosystem for generations. Also, it's a lot of eggs. That'd be like a lot of cholesterol. Like it was a really fun back and forth. But that's. Those are like the things that make a real relationship, though. Those are the conversations that make it look and feel like a real relationship.
I always think of it as more like those moments of like when you're walking by each other, like in the bathroom and you like snap a towel at the other one's butt or something. Like those little tiny things, like that's the kind of stuff long distance is really extra rough for. But you're right. I agree that they see. And that's the thing. Like I want to think these two are going to work out because they've managed to maintain that level of.
Yes.
Not getting awkward about not having the small talk. You know, they layer it in. And so I want to think that they're going to be okay.
Yeah, I like to think that this has been like their trial run. And I think, you know, they've graduated beginner, intermediate class, you know, long distance relationship. I think they're doing really well with it. The love you disconnect tonight, notwithstanding. So I think if anyone can make a go of it, I think these two probably can. I think they are committed enough to each other in a very real sense. There's no sense of like Ted is, you know, going out on these missions because there's some hot botanist out there. And we see Alexis. I mean, there's no one turning her eye. It's not like they're being tempted or which is what I think a lot of TV shows would probably do, which is also a real thing in real life that, you know, I think long distance couples always worry about is that person on the ground that may be wooing your guy or your girl.
How do you think that Alexis or Ted or even just in general long distance relationships, how do you squelch that part of it in terms of like the two of them being worried about anybody coming in on their lives. Now, I mean, Ted is in a really remote place, but see, I know some people, and I don't want to be too specific on this. I don't want to like call them out, but one of them works in a pretty remote situation and they're in, it is a co-ed situation and they are away for periods of time in a pretty remote kind of thing. And I think there is probably some canoodling. So I wonder, how do long distance people kind of deal with that? I mean, I guess that's no different than if anyone's getting it on with a coworker 7 days a week or whatever, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can't be with your partner 7 days a week. That's not a healthy relationship. For good or for bad, if you're going to be with someone, you have to trust that they're not fucking their coworker when your back is turned, when you go away for a weekend, when they go on to a conference, when they go to the Galapagos Islands. Like, that's a part of it. And if everything else seems great, but that doesn't work for you, like you can't get those worries out for either because of whatever reason or because you feel like they're not, you know, unfounded or whatever it is, like that's a problem. That's a fatal flaw in the machine. Even if everything else is working,
that makes
like
sense.
you have to trust whether in the Galapagos Islands or, you know, the like the attractive vet assistant down the street from the cafe, you know,
anybody could be a problem, right?
Everyone could be a problem. You know, for God's sakes, Gwen was stripping the minister.
I know.
Who would think, Gwen has a Bible class. Dude, she's doing the Mary Magdalene section of the Bible, though. You know?
See, again, so, though, like eye opening to what people are really doing in Bible study. I do want to say that I think one reason why this couple can work is that they both have something that they are working towards. I think that this would go really badly if either one of them suddenly had nothing going on, like she did like abandon her career or he abandoned everything he was doing. I think that's when the teeter-totter becomes imbalanced and they just completely mess this thing up. But right now, them both being like in their own lanes busy seems okay.
I was just having a conversation very recently with someone who has a little bit of a long distance thing going right now because of, you know, a work situation. The one partner is very busy and the other partner is not so busy, has like a job, but otherwise is spending a lot of time like at night alone. Mm. It's a strain because of that imbalance. You know, that exact thing is, if one person has so much free time, it makes it very hard if you don't have something to keep your mind occupied. But I think you're right here. It's working because they're both very, very busy, you know? So
that makes sense.
I wanted to bring you back to the interview before we wrapped up. What did you think of Moira when she gets going with the she says, don't adjust your sets? How many people watching this episode remember what the idea of adjusting your sets even refers to? Barb and Lizzie had no fucking idea what she meant by adjust your sets.
I think very few. I don't know if you've seen, but I want to say it's on Ellen where she brings in people. Millennials mostly, but really even people older than that, and has them try to use a rotary phone. No one can do it. Like, it's embarrassing. I'm like, God, for real? That makes me feel really, really old. They're like pushing at the buttons when it's like a rotary phone.
Oh my God, that's
it's
so funny.
Really. Wait, bad.
I had a rotary phone. It was one of our landlines in my house through, like, I was 15 or 16 when we got rid of it.
Grandparents had one for forever, and it had like the 30-foot long cord. So you could open the basement door and like sit all the way at the bottom of the steps and like be on the phone.
So
it is hilarious. But yeah, I think that Moira is a classic in that she's always going to bring up some antiquated something. I was just saying the other day that she introduced me to a word that I love and I'm trying to make it part of my normal vocabulary. It hasn't quite fit in yet. But when it was the Singles Week one and she was trying to tell Alexis to don't move on with the event without her. And she goes, don't go, you little frippin'. And I'm like, I want to start calling people frippets, but I need it to come out naturally. So I need to not be like, remember to use frippet today. I just want it to just happen naturally. But I love Moira's words. I love the way she just throws it out there like that. And you're like, wait, what was that word? I love it.
What was the book? It was Foyle's Flavory. I think that was the book that
she
uses. Man.
When I was in elementary school, I had a friend who had a wonderful vocabulary. So she would always have Amity's Word of the Week. And like that's when I learned like plethora. I didn't know plethora when I was in like third grade. And I thought that was like a great word. And also she would say the trials and tribulations of Amity. She would say that all the time. She was like in second grade. And I was like, you are awesome. It's very turned on by words. I thought that was awesome.
They made your mind explode.
They did. I really loved it. I really loved it. So overall, this episode I thought was amazing. I thought they did great. I loved the mix of, like you said, like the heart, but then also the loins with the David and the Patrick. And I felt like as parents, we had Johnny and Moira playing those like nurturing roles where Johnny's really trying to help along Bob and Moira's really trying to help along Alexis. And in not just in her own career, but like, you know, playing along with that this was all a big publicity stunt and all that kind of stuff. Like, she just was so supportive of what was happening. I thought that was a great role.
She was
for
a bit of Alexis's wingman.
Yeah.
The way David was almost Patrick's wingman with
Jane. And Johnny was Bob's.
Well, and Johnny was Bob. Well, Ronnie actually turned out to be the
best wingman.
Oh,
right. But Johnny was.
I had a question, though, because I'm sure you can answer this. I drew a blank. At the beginning of the episode, they have the cue cards. And Alexis, I give her so much credit. She knows her mother so well. She has all of the cue cards about, don't talk about streaming. Move on. Stop it.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Like she was just so ready for what her mother was going to devolve into. She knew it. But then there was a cue card said, talk about Blair. Who is Blair? Did you see that? And if so, did you know who they were talking about? Who Blair was?
I did, because I've been rewatching. I've been going back and watching. I don't think I would have remembered his name had I not just seen it. But Blair is the director for the Crows movie, The Crowning. And so he was the guy who had like the really dark hair. And he, that doesn't help at all on this show, does it? The guy with the really dark hair. He had a big budget movie in this. He was like real bummed out that he had to do the Crow movie. And Moira actually like was talking him up. She was like, there's real potential here. And we can really do something with this. And good old Blair. Look at Alexis. Like, it's like full circle. Like, now talk Blair up. You can do it. I thought that was great and cute and like a funny little callback. Like, oh yeah, Blair. Remember she made that movie in Bosnia. Oh yeah.
Well, another episode where lots of laughs, some good heart tugging, but also they ask great questions that really is interesting to apply to your own life and think about how you would handle it if one of your friends was pressed with the situation.
Quick little interview that I'll tell you that I thought, man, they're just saying the same stuff we are, because this show is just so universally accepted this way. It was the couple that opened up Rose Apothecary pop-up in Sharon Springs, New York. And they are doing
just
it.
Just upstate from me.
Yeah, they're doing it right now for a limited run. They were a couple and they just were talking about, they were very Patrick and David. They were very sweet with each other. And one of their biggest things is that they just really appreciated the kindness in the show and how everybody was so good to each other, taking care of each other. That's just how they felt. And I guess their general store was actually extremely similar to this whole premise. They were doing the same things, the locally sourced, all under one house kind of thing. And so they just felt like this was the right thing to do. So they actually got in touch with the show producers and set up the whole thing. They just said everything was kind and loving, like from start to finish. And so I feel like, yay, like we're not wrong in feeling that as audience members. If you really interacted with the real people, we'd all feel the same way. That's amazing. How many shows are that authentic to their actual people? I would say zero.
It's actually, it's Beekman 1802 Mercantile in Sharon Springs, New York. I'm sure they have a website. It's actually Beekman1802.com. You should go give them a look. There's actually great stories about how the people in Sharon Springs fit so well into the Schitt's Creek model. Aww. And that the town as a whole has really turned into the Schitt's Creek love. Like they're fully running with the idea of, this is the kind of place that we would like to be and be known for. You know, we have the people that you love in Schitt's Creek make up small towns, you know, around the country and in this town of Sharon Springs also. But yeah, definitely give them a go. I think you could buy their stuff. I think they have they're doing some merchandise,
not just some
tie-in stuff.
They changed their entire store into Rose Apothecary. It's really beautiful.
Awesome. The picture alone, the way they redid just the facades and stuff is it's crazy. But yeah, give them a shout out or look at Beekman1802.com.
Yeah, it's awesome. Oh, even their town sign looked like it reminded me of Schitt's Creek. It wasn't as graphic, but definitely. I'm wondering now if Sharon Springs has massage trains. What do you think? Should we all head up there? Check it out.
I am, as soon as we're done recording. That is how I'm going to.
A birthday treat for Mike.
I'm only like 90 minutes away. Spend the remainder of my birthday getting a massage train up in the apothecary.
Well, happy birthday to you. I hope it ends with a happy ending.
As do I.
This is Caroline with Daily Review.
And this is Mike with Pop Culture Review. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production.
Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.
Pod Clubhouse.